This is the IO Close Podcast, show number 10.
Who am I creating new value for? And the thing about it, that could end up being somebody who's not your existing customer.
Welcome to the IO Clothes Podcast, where we bring you the thought leaders and innovators across the diverse landscape that are fusing tech and textiles.
Support for this episode of the IO Clothes Podcast is brought to you by Skin. Skin is the world's most advanced textile computing platform, helping evolve humanity through smart clothing. Now, one of the reasons why I'm so excited about Skin and can't wait to get my hands on my set of smart underwear is because of their approach. They decided to enable their technology to be IoT friendly. Now, what does that mean? That means seamlessly integrating with other smart products around me. I can't wait to see what that's like. And Skin's first product offering of smart undergarments comes in a variety of form factors, from men's and women's underwear bottoms to bra tops. Each set comes with four garments, two electronic modules, and one wireless charger. You can pre-order your set today and save up to $80. I've already pre-ordered mine and am anxiously waiting for the shipping notice. For more information on Skin, check out skiin.com and follow them on social media at Second Skin. That's at @SKIIN on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am your host, Ben Cooper, and today we'll be speaking with Sean Harris, Global Innovation Strategy Lead for Zebra Technologies. Now, this episode is a bit different from many of the other conversations we have with experts in the industry. The reality is, innovative products don't just sell themselves, and companies aren't composed of just designers, engineers, and developers. Someone's going to interface with the customer and keep the ship sailing along a strategic path, which includes profitability. Now that's if you want to stay in business. Today, we shift gears and we talk a bit about the struggles of retail, the importance of differentiating yourself in the marketplace, and how our current relationship with Microsoft Excel may be a sign of the future. Enjoy. Well, welcome to the IO Close Podcast, Sean. We're excited to have you.
Hey, excited to be here.
You know what? You and I go a little ways back, probably about almost 5 years now.
Yes.
We were both in the Mass Challenge 2013 class, fellow alum, great program.
Still got my t-shirt.
I still wear that shirt all the time. The blue one?
The blue one, yeah.
Class 2013. Yeah. It was a good time. But, we obviously... we connected while we were there. It's been great that we've been able to stay in touch post Mass Challenge. And you're doing some really interesting stuff that we're going to get into. You now work and lead global innovation for Zebra Technology, right? Yeah,
correct.
And so we're going to get into that. It's a little bit different from a lot of the guests that we've had on thus far, because we've had a lot of product focused or folks that are in the textile industry, but you know, the perspective that I think you're bringing to the table is a bit more from the IoT, the Internet of Things, and what the impact could be from a retail perspective. And I'm total fanboy of your content that you put out on Twitter. So you guys, first and foremost, you have to follow @SmarterRetailer on Twitter. You got to follow it.
Perfect.
I mean, if you guys are wondering, like, oh, where's this crazy guy coming up with some of the things that I recirculate, it's coming from Sean. Sean's got incredible, ear to the ground, really legit sources, and he just seems to come up with the stuff as soon as it hits the ground. So
I try.
You more than try. You deliver, my friend. So, hey, don't take my word for it. Go and follow him on Twitter, and you'll find all that stuff. But, you know, enough of me talking. I want to hear from you. I want to hear about what you're up to today.
Yeah. You know, before I jump into what I'm up to today, just to give myself a little bit of cred with the all the folks in the fashion and apparel industry out there, I did run my own menswear company for a number of years, and we actually manufactured clothing. So, you know, I had to go about acquiring fabric and building a partner network, a global partner network to achieve the production of everything from, you know, casual shirts to suits to shorts and the like. So we had a couple of different categories that we built for. So I have appreciation for that somewhat side of the industry as well.
Sorry for shortchanging you, by the way.
It's all good. Just want to make sure I get my street cred with this audience, you know?
Check, you got it.
So yeah, so now I head up basic global innovation strategy at Zebra Technologies within their Global Plus Accounts group, which has a particular focus on four key accounts and those representing, I'll just say it, the largest retailer in the world, the largest e-commerce company in the world, and the two largest deliveries, transportation logistics companies in the world.
I think people can figure it out from there.
Yeah. So those four companies are our particular focus. However, you know, my job is to kind of look at basically the possible and explore the possible and kind of keep myself attuned to what is happening out there from a technology perspective, from a, you know, kind of consumer expectation perspective, no matter what, who that consumer is, and look at how can I, you know, identify a need, then, you know, define a problem, and then ideate with some other folks on, you know, what could be a potential innovative solution.
Right.
And so that kind of keeps me, you know, busy on a day-to-day basis. It's an exciting thing, whether it be just, you know, the ideals of learning, and I'm a lifelong learner and will always be. Well, I hope I will always be at this point. I believe I will always be wanting to learn something new. And then looking at how I can make those things that I pick up practical and have them, you know, create business value for our customers.
Where is the passion coming from? Because again, I'm not just blowing smoke. You don't have to. And I'm not just saying this because I'm here with you. You're on top of this stuff, you know, and I know it's your job, but you kind of go beyond that.
Sure.
You know, you don't have to have Smarter Retailer, I don't believe, you know.
No,
so
no.
Like, where is that passion coming from? Why are you putting your creative energy and kind of devoting your life to this space? What is it about it that kind of turns you on to it all?
Yeah. So, you know, and you just mentioned this, we met at a Startup Accelerator Mass Challenge, and you know, that I think at that point might have been my third or fourth startup or something. Fundamentally, I'm very entrepreneurial, right? And what that means is sometimes you have a little bit of you know, long-term focus issues. You just want to, like, you get really hard focused on something. You want to drive it and then do it again, right? You want to do that same sort of birthing process over and over and over again to create that net new thing. And I look at retail as a dynamic environment that allows you to constantly be on your toes and help thinking about, well, what can I do differently tomorrow to make it such that something good that happened today happens again, or something that wasn't so good doesn't happen tomorrow. And the dynamic nature of interacting with people caused that to happen on a daily basis, right? And, you know, the consumer is fickle. They, you know, have shifting desires on an ongoing basis. And so I think that, again, that dynamic nature of what retail is and how people want to be engaged with, and all the kind of other influences that come to bear, make it an exciting place to be.
Right.
Right. It's a scary place to be right now, but it's an exciting place to be.
Well, that's a great segue to what I want to ask you, which is retail dead? Are we seeing the end of it, or is it the rebirth? And what do you see as being this, if we have retail, the new model, if you will?
I don't think it's like a binary thing. Like, it's not like, you know, retail's going to live and retail's dead. I think definitely, though, traditional retail is in hospice. Right? It's traditional. If you're approaching the marketplace the way that you classically have with, you know, driving your variable approach to promotions and pricing and hoping that I can get maybe some special product in there. And you need to think beyond the core ideals of buying something at a low price, marking it up and selling it.
Right.
You gotta be more. And I think that traditional retailers who believe that if I just execute on buying something low and marking it up a little bit and selling it, and all those other little key points of classic retail are missing the big picture. The shift that's happening in retail right now is not cyclical in nature. It's not going to, like, you know, we're just in a bad patch and it's going to come back. We're going to be okay. Let's just stick to these core things. It's a structural shift. The way that people want to engage with you, who has the power, is changing. And I think that retailers need to really think differently about partnerships, about go-to-market strategies, about core ideals like who owns the customer, right? All need to be rethought. If they don't, then, you know, you're gonna sit back and watch as, you know, large pure play companies start to just take more and more and more share, you know. And so I think it's not dead, but unfortunately and undoubtedly, there's going to be a lot of consolidation to come of companies that we historically had all known and loved.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. So as a thing, retail is not dead. It's not going anywhere. It's changing. If you're just focused on a traditional retail and, you know, I have 500 stores or I have 1,000 stores or whatever it is, and, you know, you have that significant assets that are the significant assets that are out there, and, you know, you're working harder to protect those than to shift to what this customer wants to do, I think you might be thinking about it in the wrong way.
It's incredibly fascinating to kind of see the change because, you know, with as much pressure and as quickly as retail seems to be consolidating, and for some of the very well-known companies out there, whether it be Sears, JCPenney, you know, and many, many, many others, Macy's and others that are out there, you know, and I read the statistic recently that 90% of commerce still takes place at retail.
It does.
You know, so it's kind of one of those things where we see this, it seems as if the sky is falling and that everyone has gone to mobile, or not just mobile, but has gone online to buy their products. But the truth of the matter is that's just not the case, you know, and there's a lot of other systemic issues that are influencing this change.
Don't forget, like, one market that is growing at maybe 1% or actually declining at 1%, 2% a year, being like the traditional, you know, whatever, $5 trillion industry. And then you have an industry that is, you know, $500 billion or something like that, that is growing at 16, 20%, you know, annually. You slowly start to get to a case where, yeah, you can start it. Because that statement around 90% still happens through, you know, brick and mortar stores, it used to be like 95, you know,
yeah, right.
And then tomorrow, it'll right. So you know, it'll be 85,
right.
But still 80% go through, but still 70%, but still 60%.
Yeah.
Still, you know, like,
right.
Like, I think, like, everybody should go with, I think it was, Andy Grove, who was like, you know, always stay paranoid.
Right.
I think that retailers need to be paranoid. Even though no question, it's a small chunk, but the all the signals are there that it's headed, accelerating towards more and more people wanting to engage by going on their mobile phone, tablet, and slowly I think there's getting some traction with voice interactions,
right?
And that people are gonna fall into growing up that way. And store? What was a store?
I mean,
they're not going to disappear, but
I can't tell you the last time I've actually walked into a mall. I'm being dead serious. I can't remember. In fact, I went to a brick and mortar yesterday. I will not disclose the name of this company.
Sure.
But I will tell you this. I went in there. I bought a product.
Yeah.
I'm going to return it on Saturday. You know why I'm returning on Saturday? Because that's when my prime delivery for that product arrives.
Your replacement.
That's right.
Or the action. Yeah.
You know? So I don't know because I haven't done a thorough research on this, but I don't think I'm alone in that strategy. I do it because I needed it. I needed it last night. So, you know, I'm going to go and I got it.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'll hold it against you. You know,
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'm the only one out there. but I do want to drill a little bit more into what product's responsibility, or I guess impact, may be on the retail experience. There's a lot of Me Too products out there. And do you feel that there's a stagnation in the product world? Do you think that it's kind of category specific in certain industries and certain product arenas? They're doing a great job in innovation and that's driving people to go out there and buy it. Do you think that because they do such a good job, people, you know, are able to access it online? Like, do you see product actually having an impact on creating a revitalization or a renaissance with the brick and mortar or retail experience?
Yeah, I mean, look at Apple, right? They have, I think, hands down, one of the best product experiences from a technology perspective. But also, I once heard their leader for their stores talk at a conference, and she was like, yeah, but the biggest product that Apple has is their stores, right? Is the store itself. And we've all seen these Apple stores, like they're museums, they're pieces of art in themselves and experiences in themselves. I think with respect to product that is sold at the POS or at the till, that there is opportunity to innovate there, but not for the sake of just innovating, but for targeting a particular customer or user need, right? Like a gap, find an opportunity. You know, there's a lot of great science that's happening with respect to materials. There's a lot of, you know, things that I've seen that's like, oh man, like look at material flex in a particular way when you either, you know, heat it or cool it or add some small pulse electricity to it, it'll change in different ways. And, oh, look at this other material that, you know, when you do the same sort of things, it changes colors. You know, those two things together are an innovation that allows for somebody to buy one thing and have multiple outfits because I can tweak the shape and style of it. And I can then tweak the colorways as well based on, you know, leveraging technology, right? And so I think like that sort of innovation in material science innovations and, you know, where somebody can say like from a sustainability perspective, and there's a lot of great work happening there. I think innovating in ways that one are practical for somebody where I can say, man, if I buy this one shirt, I'm going to get 16 different types of use patterns out of it, right? Colorways out of it. It's sustainable and it's an innovation that's cool because I don't have to buy 16 different shirts. You know, I think that they're like everything else that's happening out there in the landscape from a consumer kind of shopper interaction with a retailer or a brand is that there's this abstraction of complexity occurring where basically you're constantly making it easier for me to do X, right? You're making it such that I have more time to do something else that I really want to be doing. Right. And so whether it be, you know, retail experiences like Amazon Go or, you know, novelty things like a smart cooler that has a radio and, you know, and everything, bottle, everything that you can imagine in it. Finding ways to abstract out complexity for the consumer, I think, are key. And I think that will find its way into like fashion with, you know, things like, you know, normcore, right? With that idea of having simple style and simple colorways, right? That makes it easy for somebody to make a decision. But at the same time, I think that there's an opportunity to add some flex to style, flex to colors using material science right. That still keeps it simple, but gives people options.
What do you think the effects are going up the food chain or upstream for folks that are, because you got the retail experience and then you get the brand that may be selling through to the retailer and then they've got their manufacturer, they've got their supply chain, they've got their material suppliers. How do you see the ripple effects, or are you tracking that, you know, what the ripple effects are kind of happening downstream to companies that are supporting brands and retailers with these product innovations and or new ways of operating? Because traditional models in at least the apparel and footwear world, they're very long development cycles,
sure.
You know, and not particularly agile either, at least under the current traditional models, you know. There's a lot of speculating and things like that. And so because, of course, they've got to be able to figure out exactly what materials they need and all that stuff. So, you know, if you mentioned it before, which is consumers are, I don't know if they're becoming more fickle or their fickleness is felt because they can be. I don't know what mm-hmm. the difference is, but again, going back to the downstream effects, are you tracking that, and do you have any thoughts on what, you know, someone that maybe a manufacturer that has a very traditional way of operating, any advice that you might impart to them?
So undoubtedly suppliers are feeling the pressure of the downstream marketplace, right? So retailers are having to kind of put pressure on their pricing, which is driving down their margins, which is going to then influence the folks who they're buying products from. They're going to put pressure on them. It's going to go all the way back, right? So when you get into, and most as you go further, kind of back upstream, if you will, that more commoditization is happening, right? So when I look at these the companies that are like the manufacturers and the suppliers, I mean, they're going to have to think about, well, how do I continue to differentiate what I'm offering to my partners, to my customers, that customers being the manufacturers, you know, and so forth and so on. How do I continue to differentiate? And that's going to be through things like, you know, segmentation of my customer base, choosing who's a good customer versus not anymore, you know, for me from a margin perspective. But one of the key things is going to be around innovating on product, innovating on the thing that you're selling. I think that more innovation, more understanding of kind of looking, you know, as things go downstream, how do I differentiate my product? And I think it's going to come through not only driving, you know, you're going to survive not only through driving efficiencies, through leveraging automation and AI and all those great things, but through product differentiation in your provided bolts and your stitchings and in all of your, you know, accessories. And I think it's going to be around how can I get, again, like things like flexible fabrics that flex based on, you know, some sort of how do I make it such that a material can have varying color schemes? Can I make it such that I build an economical fabric that has a great price point and biodegrades, right? So it's not just, we're not cluttering the world with stuff.
Right.
I think that this sort of innovation needs to be coming from these manufacturers, and because they're going to be getting pricing pressure that's starting with the consumer. I'm not paying all this money. And that doesn't just get dealt with or handled by the retailer.
Right. So you talked about financial pressures that are, not may, that are being kind of felt. Also, some of the commoditization that is even occurring at even a faster clip than maybe the industry has traditionally been accustomed to. Mm-hmm. Do you see opportunities for new business models, new revenue models through things like services? You know, this is kind of getting into maybe more of like the IoT world and things like that, the Internet of Things. You know, do you see opportunities like that? Are you seeing it maybe in other industries, not necessarily in the apparel, footwear, textile world, but, you know, where folks are starting to think about this connected either retail experience, the efficiencies within their manufacturing supply chain, and they're able to create new business opportunities and or revenue streams for themselves? Are you seeing anything like that?
So what I am seeing are people saying, like, if I can put some degree of a sensor into a product, that is going to produce data. And through that data from a device and the aggregate of all the components that are out there, that I can use things like deep learning to derive out insights that I otherwise wouldn't be able to see. And from that, start to think about, okay, who is this valuable to? Whether it be turning it around and saying to the people who had bought that thing that I had that sensor in, here's something you didn't know that can make your experience better, thus making the overall ownership experience better. Or you can turn around and saying, hey, I have this great insight for you. Here's a little bit. If you want more, pay me. Right. Or taking that data and turning to somebody else and saying, like, hey, I have this data. Here's some insights. You might be interested in these insights. Pay me.
Right.
And or otherwise taking the raw data, cleansing it some, right? Because everything's not valuable, and making it available just as a platform mm-hmm. so people can build on top of it. I see that happening as well out there.
Do you think that's going to become more common?
When you're looking at developing a revenue model, it's just trying to think through who's going to gain value from this, right? And given the nature of the discrete nature of all the data coming off of these things and how much is coming, and I think that it's going to take thinking beyond your existing way of doing business, which is difficult. You're going to constantly have people inside the company going, well, it doesn't hit the hurdle rate for us. You know, we typically need X, right? X margin in our business, you know, when we do something. And I'd say that those sorts of pushbacks that occur as you're trying to develop these new models are something that you got to expect and kind of navigate through. But it's really trying to think differently, I guess, is what I'm getting at, about these revenue streams, but starting out with, who am I creating new value for? And the thing about it, that could end up being somebody who's not your existing customer, being open to that fact and being able to have people who can help you think through that. You capture a bunch of data, you know, for an example, like if you have self-driving cars coming down, there's a bunch of data that they're pulling off, and you may think, okay, well, how can I kind of sell this data back to the consumer? Is there anything I do with the consumer? But fact is, all of a sudden now, no, it's going to be municipalities that are going to be a new customer, because they can take this data and make improvements to roads, or, you know, and lights and you know, stoplights and the like. It's that sort of thing that I think just generally folks who are getting into IoT or looking at building an IoT solution need to think about. Think differently.
So I've got one last question for you. I ask all of the IO Close guests this question. I need you to take out your crystal ball. Do you have your crystal ball?
I do.
All right, great. What does the world of retail, IoT, what does it look like? What is, if I'm a consumer or a business owner, what is my world? And you can pick any of those tracks. I don't expect you to pick all of them. But, you know, what is my world? What does my world look like 3 to 5 years out?
Yeah. You know, I think there's just going to be this continued acceleration of getting out of the consumer's way. I think that more and more of my retail interactions are going to be ambient in nature. It's just going to be part of the fabric of my technological life, my world. So that being from, you know, right now we have things like subscribe and save, right? So, you know, I sign up to a program, they bill me, they ship me a bunch of stuff. I think that the need for you to have to go and figure out like what you need and when you need it is going to disappear. And not even what you need and when you need it, but can I afford it, is going to disappear. Mm. I think that a lot of systems are going to take over for that cognitive effort of acquiring things that I need. And we see it in Excel. We trust Excel. We'll put a value in a field. We'll put a value in another field, run a formula. We trust the answer. We trust the fact that when I search in Google, many people trust the fact that I'm getting everything that's available on the internet. There's nothing more, right? I don't see a difference in the systems that are getting built today around whether it be Alexa or Google Home or just generally, we trust Google Maps. There's no better way than Waze as well, right? Right. I think that is going to continue to manifest itself in ways where, I just got this delivery, whether it be to the front of my home, front of my door, or the Amazon key or Walmart's right. version of it, or whoever, in my pantry, in my refrigerator. I must have needed it. I'm not thinking about how it was paid for or where those funds came from, because there's going to be systems that are telling me, you're okay. Don't right. worry, I got you. Don't right. worry about it. I think that we're just going to constantly give up more and more of our need to think about some of these things, because for what it's worth, I think those things are complex, and there's constantly this abstraction of complexity.
Right.
And there are things where people go, oh, I would never do this. But yeah, I mean, you give money to a broker that uses a robo-advisor to manage your funds, you're forgetting about it. I think the same sort of thing is going to happen where, you know, I can say, you know, hey, Alexa, I want to go on a vacation in January. Where should I go? Where can I go? And she'll tell you, Alaska, you should go here. You should go there. You want me to book it? Yeah, book it. Not thinking about how much. Alexa right. knows whether you can afford or not. She didn't offer up suggestions that you couldn't afford. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think that that's kind of this world we're going to move to, where it's really just, you're just, you're just living.
That's exciting. 3 to 5 years out.
Well, I think a lot of it will start to be in place, but maybe I'm pushing it a little
bit. No, listen, if you look back in time, 10 years ago, the smartphone, as we know it, did not exist, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Airbnb didn't exist.
Yeah.
Uber didn't exist. I mean, and now I'm dependent on Uber.
Yeah. Just think about how fast. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, and we're always, one of the things about us as humans, right? And you probably heard this before, but we're very linear in how we think, right? It's a straight line growth, right? In terms of how we think. But gosh, I mean, if you can't look back and see, like you just said, how quickly the smartphone kind of came into mass use as compared to, historic things like, the TV, the radio. I mean, those took decades as opposed to, a few years, right? And so the other thing is that now with these systems, these artificial intelligence based systems that are thinking about multiple things at rates well faster than we could ever, right? I mean, we got systems that are designing furniture now based on things that we would never have thought of, right? I think that those factors are going to come to play too, with helping to think about how should I introduce something, do a new product introduction to a consumer. So yeah, I wouldn't. Maybe all the things I mentioned won't be there in 3 to 5 years, but I think that we're going to be on that path, and the maturity is going to be probably like level 3, level 4 almost, right? But I think that's where it's going to go. Hey, I need this. It's going to be every Alexa is going to be your admin, right? That's that's the words you say. I want, can you? And those are the things that are around solving my problems, right? And so you're going to have a problem. You're going to hear the solution, removing all the friction from that solution, not choices. Give me the answer. That's what we want. We want answers. We want actions. And I think these systems are going to, undoubtedly drive that for us, right, wrong, or indifferent. And, just generally with respect to where these things are going, like you can have two sides of a points of view, right? You could have the abundance and the Peter Diamandis view. Right, you can have the Ray Kurzweil and the Age of Spiral Machines view, which Ray speaks a lot about the good of these things, but also the fact that and it's already happening. This merger of us and machine is happening. IoT and these sorts of things are external to us, but they're undoubtedly a part of that story and where things are headed. And how many people live in Facebook at this point?
It's 100% true.
How many people get swayed by the things that they see there, and right, wrong, or indifferent? I just think all that's going to accelerate. So AR and VR, it's going to continue to blur what's real, right? The definition of real and what is going to be real anymore at that point? Yeah. It's going to be real to me. Our brains will start changing based on our experiences and how we engage with these things. And so we're just headed down a path of immersion into these technologies. It's both exciting and scary. It's the two places I think that will probably be last to shift to it. It's kind of having this conversation with my wife. I think it's going to be governments and human services. I think it's, and those may be the ones who we need to be ahead of this.
Right.
Right. I think that governments they understand it undoubtedly, right? Our government in the US, they run DARPA. They get what's going, they define the future in many respects in DARPA. But I just think that there's going to be more lip service than there's going to be action. And I think that that's going to be a problem, because there's things that we need to be getting ahead of now, both from a government perspective, both from a human services perspective, that I think are going to be the ultimate laggards in all of this.
Right.
Unfortunately,
it's a whole lot.
It's a whole lot.
Lots to digest. The good news is that for all the wonderful listeners, you can listen to this forever.
Yeah.
And we could talk forever too, because it's incredibly fascinating. Your point of view is one that I certainly respect, and I hope there will be more people that tune in and follow you, because you're an absolute thought leader in the space. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sean. I can't thank you enough. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been great.
For more information on Zebra Technologies, check out their website at www.zebratechnologies.com. You can also check them out on social media, on Twitter at Zebra Technologies and Facebook at Zebra Technologies Global. You can also follow Sean on Twitter at Smarter Retailer. I highly recommend. And thanks for listening to another episode of the IO Clothes Podcast. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the IO Clothes Podcast. To dive deeper into this conversation and be a part of our rapidly growing community, head over to ioclothes.com to join and share your thoughts and opinions. If you're a fan of the podcast, don't be shy. Share with friends and colleagues. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or however you listen, just by searching IO Clothes. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/IO Clothes.